Hi, everybody. It's Jim Bakia, and the podcast is Be You, The World Will Adjust. There's a lot of BUing going on all over the place, and I like to have people that I've spent time with and worked with, and that I really believe that role model that saying of Be You, getting them there, not realizing that they're not being themselves fully. And I was very fortunate, I guess it was last summer, Julie, when we first met, mm-hmm. I was doing a webinar for 100 women in finance. And as I often have said, and I think I've said to you too, Julie, I come to people and people come to me, and it is serendipitous. And there's a reason we come into each other's lives. And four people reached out. And I think just to give people a little background, but Julie, I'll give you a little bit of her background too, is, you know, she worked for a major Canadian financial institution and worked for a U.S. financial institution. And you didn't know what it was, but something wasn't just right. So before we get into that, why don't you tell my listeners a little bit about your own personal history and how you came to that point where you said, I'm going to call this fat old bald guy and see if he has any ideas.
Okay, that's a big, broad question. So for my entire 25-year career, I've worked in capital markets. I've only ever worked on trading floors. And I got to the stage in my career where I realized it wasn't a fit anymore. I was feeling a little restless, like looking for that next step, not sure what it was. And that's when we crossed paths. So, you know, that would have been June of last year. And a good friend of mine who you know, had organized the webinar. And like you say, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And then we started to work together. And I'm sure we'll get into it in more detail. But through the work that we did together and that you coached me on, I was able to see that this amazing career that I'd loved so much and for so long, it wasn't a fit anymore for me, and I wasn't a fit for it.
I remember in the beginning, you know, it's almost like plotting on a chart. You know, I know there's something wrong. I'm not quite sure what it is, but I really like what I do. I like the people that I work with. And there was almost this juxtapo of denial, of almost afraid to say it out loud.
Yeah. And I mean, that was, you know, it was huge for me. Something was off. I was ready for something different. I wasn't fulfilled. I wasn't satisfied. I didn't feel like I was setting the right example for my daughter. But I couldn't quite put my finger on it because I was in a good job. I mostly liked my job. I loved, you know, the colleagues I worked with, the clients. It took some real self-reflection to come to this realization. It took me taking 100% personal responsibility. You know, again, that's certainly something that I've learned over the course of my life and is true in this situation too, is that even if you think you're just partly responsible for a situation, you've got to own the part that you're responsible for. And the more that you take personal responsibility for the situation, the more able you're going to be to change the outcome. And changing that outcome, it affects not just you, but your clients, your colleagues, your firm, your family, your kids. And what that meant for me was committing to work with you and get some coaching, right? And really dig into, okay, again, something feels off. I'm ready for a change. I didn't need a job. I had a great job and I mostly liked it. You know, so I wanted to be really intentional, right? And think about, what do I want to do for the next 5, 10, 15 years, right? Like, what's going to inspire me, energize me, fulfill me, so that then I can just do an excellent job for clients and the firm that I'm with.
One of the things I remember most is, and not that trusting people is the wrong thing to do, and that not that they were bad people and everything else, but you'd really put your career and your life in other people's hands. You would say to me repeatedly, well, you know, this person's my mentor and they're looking out for me. And I would say, yeah, I'm not so sure. And not in a bad way, but it was more sort of platitudes. And then when I got you to start poking back at them, you realize, you know what, maybe not in a nefarious way, not in a bad way, maybe nobody's really looking out for me.
Well, I just want to be really clear that I'm incredibly grateful for the career that I've had in capital markets. I was very fortunate to work for some outstanding banks with some great teams and for, some great managers and mentors and clients, right? I've learned so much from clients over the years. But I think what you're getting at is, yeah, again, that need to take charge and be the CEO of your own career. And so, yes, I've made it known that I'd like a new challenge, for example, and maybe that's not happening for somebody, right? You've made it known that you want more responsibility, and that's not happening for some reason. I think what's just so important for people to do is, again, take that personal responsibility and reflect. And so when I think about, how did I come to the realization that this career wasn't a fit for me going forward, and I was really ready for a change, that came out of reflection, right? And again, you structure the self-reflection in a way that for me was really different. I always have sought feedback, from colleagues, peers, friends, clients, managers. So it wasn't that I didn't have feedback, but what was really different about reflecting this time was making the time, right? So working with you to hold me accountable and just prioritizing, like, I need to figure out what's going on. I need to figure out what I want to do next. I had to prioritize that, right? Number two is your approach to the, you call it the infomercial. I call it a professional profile. You call it infomercial. But really what I did, and this hopefully gives some practical guidance to your listeners, is I took stock of what is a true fit role for me. And I kind of refreshed that, right? And I'd been working with in my, my mind, the definition of a true fit role that was outdated. It was the definition I'd been using for 25 years, and it just didn't hold anymore. So going through really reflecting and writing down on paper, what is a true fit role for me? And then comparing that to the career I was in, I could see it wasn't a fit anymore. To be specific, my number one passion is working with clients, right? Like developing deep, meaningful relationships and connections and learning about their challenges and problems and helping come up with solutions. That's what I've always loved. In capital markets, that is getting harder and harder to do. I looked around capital markets and asked myself, is there another role that I'd really love to do? And there wasn't.
I remember a number of times pushing you and pushing you and pushing you to seek candid conversations, right? And there was a natural, listen, everybody has this natural. People talk about candor and candidness and transparency and everything, but we're all nervous to have those conversations because part of the nervousness becomes we may not get the answer we want. And more fearfully, we may get the answer we think we're going to get, and I think there is a general theme in most people's lives that, yeah, I'd rather you be disingenuous than tell me the real hard, cold truth sometimes, right? I'd rather you flatter me and tell me, but when you're in that place where you were in, and so many people that I've spent time with are in, what was that conflict that you were dealing with, right? About having those conversations with people?
No, I think it was because I was, focused on capital markets. It's what I'd always done. This was the track I was on. You get so focused on what you're doing, probably in any role, but I think particularly for capital markets, is that we forget we can do other things. We don't realize that we've developed, really unique transferable skills that we can use to help, other segments of the market, other types of clients. What I was stuck was because I wasn't able to articulate what wasn't working. Great job. Love my colleagues, love my clients, but it was like, I'll say like a 7 out of 10, right? 8 out of 10. And, life's too short, right? You need to be enjoying what you're doing. That's the example I want to set for my daughter. It took me a while to realize that this wasn't the part of the industry I wanted to be in anymore. And so it wasn't so much, I might get feedback that I'm uncomfortable with. It was just, coming to that realization that I was going to need to take some pretty bold action. I wasn't quite sure what that was going to be, right?
Yeah. And there was nothing on the other side at that moment, right? So we're looking into the black hole of okay, I've got to the point where I know this isn't for me anymore, but now what, right?
Well, there's also, you know, I'm a single parent. I'm the main breadwinner. So it's, you can kind of think, oh, well, that would be a nice luxury to have to go find a job I really want to do, but I've got all these responsibilities. You know, those are just stories we tell ourselves, right? There's always, always a choice. You need to be really honest about with yourself about the situation that you're in, right? And if it is inspiring, energizing, and fulfilling. I think for me, again, when I went through the true fit sort of reflection, you know, we're the kinds of people I like to work with. I like to work in a lot of different types of people. I like to work in a team environment. I want to be super client focused. I want to have the intellectual rigor, you know, behind what I do. Ultimately, I always want to be learning and growing and having impact. And those two pieces were missing for me. And that wasn't down to the bank I was with or capital markets or the clients. It was just, I wasn't learning as much as I wanted to. I didn't feel the challenge was there anymore. And I didn't see how I could steepen my learning curve where I was. And I wasn't having the contribution and the impact on clients that I used to. And again, just the capital markets have changed. It's harder to have that to innovate in the same way that we used to.
For some people, they don't need the true fit. For some people, they're happy with 6 or 7. And then they can sort of run it out throughout their lives and everything else. But for people that have that sort of, there's something missing, and I know there is, and I want to find out. And I remember when we started to step out and you started interviewing, you started actually talking to clients and saying, you know, I'm thinking of doing something else. And all of a sudden you'd get great feedback. And then you were talking into the private bank and other aspects, and you were getting such great feedback about yourself. And it was almost like, wow, like this is really helping me sort of step out.
And I think that came from prioritizing, reflecting on my career and what I wanted to do for the next 5, 10, 15 years, right? Without taking that step back and really reflecting, really being honest with myself about, did I really feel like I was using all of my skills, my strengths to have maximum client impact? That all came out of the reflection, right? And then the next step, and you just got to be so honest with yourself and get feedback, right? Like work with the coach. Peer mentors are, I found, just the best mentors, right? So the people I've grown up with in the industry who know me, who are friends, can give, you know, the best, the rawest feedback, the good, bad, the ugly, and help you, right? And you know some of those people. You know, the next step is getting out there and doing the research. And I think a lot of people, women in particular, they don't take that step. Again, they sort of know something's off, but it was a bit risky for me to start exploring, and where do I start? And it's kind of like, well, just start, right? Just take that next first step. And it doesn't mean you're moving or you're making some big change. You're just getting information so you can make the best decision that you can for you, your career, and your family.
And what was amazing for me was when you would come back from each of those conversations, the change in your level of confidence about yourself. Not just in, you know, I'm really good or I'm good at what I do, but the change in, which you are, but the change in, I can do a lot more. Like, I'm not limited here. I'm actually starting to see that my core skills are applicable quite broadly, right?
And this is what, this happens, you know, I think to the best of us. We have a lot of commitments. We're busy. I mean, for me, most of the past 10 years pre-pandemic, I was spending 3 hours commuting. I was traveling for work. I'm out with clients in the evening, raising my daughter. There's a lot of noise in there, right? So suddenly being home during the pandemic, I got 3 hours a day back and less of a social life, and could, just stripping all that noise away, could really start to see, you know, there are other things I could do, right? Like, we just get so busy and focused on what we're doing, we don't step back and say, actually, what else could I do? And it's interesting. I was thinking about this this morning. When I graduated from uni, I went into sales and trading. And it was really super competitive. And I knew it was good to get in, and I knew it was going to be competitive to stay, but I was really up for the challenge and the learning. And I remember saying to people, listen, I'm going to give it a go, give it my best shot. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I'm young and I can still do lots of things. And I feel like that again, like I'm still young and I can still do lots of things. I can probably do more things, but we get just so focused on the day-to-day, the routine, that we don't step back and see what else we can do. And I do think this is a particular characteristic of capital markets because it's so, so specialized. The remuneration is good for the, you know, it's changed, but it's still good, I would say, compared to many roles. And so you get a little bit stuck, right? Like almost this, like, it's too good to leave, but do I want to stay, right?
Right. And too good to leave, do I want to stay? And I don't really want to do the work to figure out whether I want to do. But there was a turning point. You know, I remember you'd done a bunch of interviewing of different people. And then when you went to your current employer, Greyhawk, there was something immediate about it. And I remember you phoning me and you saying, this is different. You said, I'm not going to get too excited. I'm not going to get too ahead of myself, way over my skis, but this has excited me.
Yeah. And just to feel that excitement, that just sort of visceral reaction, like, I think this is it. I hadn't felt like that for a long time. And again, I think I was able to see that and feel that because of the work that we had done. I was just so crystal clear on what is the right fit for me, like where can I go and really add value and do a good job again for clients and colleagues. You know, the COO at Greyhawk, we've known each other for a very long time. Greyhawk came out of the blue. She phoned me September-ish maybe, and we started the conversations, but because I'd done all of the self-reflection, I was able to see that, you know, there was really potentially something there.
And I remember you reflecting to me, they really need my skills. They're really client focused.
Well, and that's the fit, right? Like that.
Right? Yeah.
I guess just to share with you, what is Greyhawk? You know, Greyhawk is a wealth manager. We serve successful Canadian families in the ultra high net worth segment and foundations. We provide global portfolios. So moving away from Canada focused portfolios, we include alternatives, active managers. And we provide this by investing only in third-party managers and instruments and provide access to those managers that would be really hard for families or foundations to access otherwise. And we're independent. But the number one, what just drew me to Greyhawk was the passion for doing an excellent job for Canadian families and foundations.
Yes. And then the other thing I remember you telling me about is how it was seamless with the people. Not just the person who you'd known for a long time. As you keep meeting people, it was, I think you used the word, it was effortless. Like the conversations were with people as if I'd known them forever. There was none of that discomfort, physical feeling of being in somebody's space, right?
Yeah, it was after every, you know, meeting, interview I had, I just felt expansive, right? And you do feel in your body if you're expansive or contracting, and that really tells you something. And it has been we're working hard, we're growing, we're building. There's just a huge amount of passion again for doing an excellent job for clients and for really bringing them an approach to wealth management, which is long-term. Again, what we're bringing is different in Canada.
It's interesting because, you know, as I've said many a times, not right or wrong, good or bad. I don't believe in that. Most of the times it's just the lens in which you look at people through and where you were, they didn't need you in the same way as they perhaps needed you earlier on in your career. The organization had changed, the industry had changed, the value they attributed to that had changed. Yet you're recognizing yourself that I actually have more value, whether you can use it or can't use it. There has to be people out there that will recognize that value. And I think that Greyhawk saw that in you. It's been fantastic with you.
Yeah. Right? And I think it's not so much that I didn't feel appreciated or valued, but the scope wasn't there for me to have the impact on clients and contribute to clients the way I wanted to. At Greyhawk, I'm working it's just so personal. I'm working with families and foundations and really able to help them figure out their wealth strategy for the long term. And it's interesting because I'd always been interested in wealth management and working with individual clients and families. The traditional investment advisor model wouldn't have been a fit for me. You know, in Greyhawk, we're building and we're growing. It's very entrepreneurial compared to what I've done in the past. I've only ever worked for big banks. The pace of decision making is quick, it's fast, where it's dynamic. Again, a very high energy group of people, huge amount of passion, which again, I think I'd been missing for a couple of years in capital markets.
Well, the nice thing about entrepreneurial organizations, you know, they're flat organizations. So there's not a lot of people vying for whose butt are their lips attached to for the next promotion, that type of thing. It fits you well because, you know, you are all about performance. You're about helping your clients perform. You're about performance in general. And I remember meeting you and thinking how dynamic and how incredible you were. And I always take these things personally when other people don't feel the same way as I do.
There was one thing I think is important to talk about, but is risk. There's a perception that it's easier to stay where you are than to look at making a change or a move. And I see this particularly with women. And what I would really encourage listeners to do is do your risk assessment, but don't just assess the risk of a change or a move. Write out the risks of staying and not doing anything, right? If you don't make a decision and take charge, decisions are going to be made for you. And there's a huge opportunity cost to doing something that isn't fulfilling. You get one life. We don't, you know, it isn't a dress rehearsal as we've heard many times. And so there's risk to doing nothing. So I think there was a lot more perceived risk of my move than actual risk. And you do what you can to mitigate those risks.
I totally agree. You know, it's like my slogan says, indecision is a killer. People think that if I don't make a decision, then it's less risky than if I do make one, but de facto you have it. And you know, you've mentioned a couple of times your love of your daughter and your role modeling of your daughter. And so hopefully you've taken what you've learned about yourself and everything else and now giving her the advice, and I would suspect many other people as well, about the same thing, right?
I was thinking about, you know, what is it that I hope that my daughter's taken away from this? I hope she takes away that you do really need to enjoy what you're doing for your career. Yeah, and I just hope she, you know, I want to role model the not settling. You don't have to settle.
There is a better life. I think one of the key things you said is you have to set aside time to do the research and find out. You are beyond one of my favorite people that I've known, but you are one of the best stories that I love to tell. And the reason I love to have people like you and other people on the show is because it's just such a joy for me to see the joy in your life now and know that it impacts your daughter as well. And your joy is impacting so many other people. And I have different people on the show because, like in my book, I had so many people tell their stories because everybody's story resonates with different people at different times. So I'm so happy for you. I'm so proud of you. I use you as a shining example, and I wish you nothing but the best. And to my listeners, I like to have people tell their stories because everybody has a story and everybody's story resonates differently with different people. And I know that from my book, True Fit, because when I had everybody tell their stories in the book, people have said to me that read the book, you know, I felt like so-and-so's story was just like mine. And so I know sometimes the message seems like it's the same message. It is, that you are in control of your life and you can do something about it. And you have to overcome the fear of laziness and the fear of being paralyzed. And I hope through all of the different people that we have on the show, that it gives you some encouragement to realize that life can be better and that you don't have to just accept it for what it is and go, oh, well, what can I do? So, as part of my mission, I want people to be happier and find happiness. Next thing I want to just say is I've noticed a high, and not just the Olympics with Simone Biles, and But there's a high degree of anxiety in society today by, you know, all kinds of people, anxiety about work, going back, vaccination, get vaxxed, not vaxxed, anxiety about going out, anxiety, anxiety, anxiety. Probably not surprising. So I just ask everyone in the world, take a little deep breath and give people a little more room and understanding than perhaps in the past you might have. And lastly, I had a very special thing happen. My son, was a member of the Equinox Jack, went to check in last week. And the young lady that was at the counter said to him, "Are you Jim Bakey's son?" And he said, "As a matter of fact, I am." And she goes, "I'm a BU listener." So if you're listening today, my friend from the Equinox Club, thank you for being a listener. Thank you for reaching out to Jack. And I wish you all well. And I hope you had a great long weekend in Canada. And we'll talk soon. The podcast is BU. The world will adjust.